All right, come on in, plenty of seats left. A lot of what I share is going to be based upon a book that I wrote called Survivor Thrive, Six Key Relationships Every Pastor Needs. I'd love to give these two copies away. First of all, let me just ask, boy, you're excited to get a book, aren't you? Man, I haven't said how we're going to do it. Okay, if anybody did not wake up with dry pants this morning, okay, that would be you right there. All right, right there. That was going to be my question. He obviously knew what I was going to ask. So that's right, man. That's what I pray every morning. Wake up with a pulse and dry pants and it's a good day, right? All right. Who is the newest pastor here? I mean, you are brand new in your church. You've been active in your church for like less than a week. Anybody? You were installed in your church in the last 6 months. All right, a couple of you. The last 5 months. No, it's not an exact tie. Okay, so we've got three guys here. Five and a half months. Who has been in their church for 5.5 months or less? Woo! Oh, right here? Okay, we're going to give that one to you then, all right? These guys just all of a sudden chickened out. You know, it was 6 months, and then they were gone all of a sudden. All right, so you can get those. The best place and the place that's least expensive is actually, I think it's on Amazon still, and it's in some bookstores. You can get it at Lifeway and, you know, Christian Book, those types of places. All right, it's always a big help to me if I know who's in the room. So you know what, if you're a pastor, would you raise your hand? All right, very helpful. If you're a chaplain, would you raise your hand? Thank you for being here. If you're a missionary, would you raise your hand? Awesome. Okay, church planters. Love it. Love it. Okay, if you're like involved in some type of like a ministry leadership, if you might be involved in like a nonprofit, you might be involved in one of the agencies. If you're here and you're a layperson. All right. We need more of those at these conferences, you know? All right, if you're a spouse, if you're here as a spouse, love it. Welcome. Thank you for being here. Church administration. Anybody here? Church administration? Okay. All right. One of the main reasons why we're here with a group that's called Pastor Serve. We've got 13 staff here right now in this session. We just have myself and Wesley Horn, who's right up here. We have been brought here by the Wesleyan Church just to serve you. That's why we come. We've been involved with the Wesleyan Church now for about 6 years. We were here at the conference last time. We've been at lots of so we come to your districts and such. We're here to serve you. And a big reason why we're here is we want to meet with you one-on-one. Even though it's Friday, it's not too late. There are still lots and lots of sessions left in which we would love to meet with you. Also afterwards, if you would like to have a free coaching session, there is a card that looks just like this. If you would just please fill out this card, you can have a free coaching session. So that's why we're here. There is still time. Now, we know that oftentimes it's, well, I might like to meet with you. I think we'd like to meet with you. We're still considering it, but there's always just a bit of apprehension. So let me just walk through a few things I think are just extremely important. First of all, we're all broken, right? You know what that means? It means that we sin and we hurt people, right? We're all broken. We're all broken. You know what? We need Jesus as much as you do. We need grace as much as you do. So please do not think, well, gosh, I don't want to go to those guys because I feel like they would be like above me. We are not above you. We are your peers because we're all broken and we all need Jesus. There's nothing that you could possibly share with us that will make us think less of you because we know that you're broken. There's nothing you can share with us that we have not heard before. We've been at this now for just about 20 years. We've heard everything at this point. So don't think, well, this will shock them because this is off the wall. Trust me, after 20 years of hearing just a lot of confessions, we've heard everything that's off the wall. It's all confidential. So if we hear things, we think, well, that's a terrible situation. We're not going to run to your DS or to the big wigs or to Wayne or anybody and say, you need to know about this situation. It's confidential. We believe everybody just needs to have a chance just to process. This does not mean you're in crisis. Don't think, well, gosh, if I was in crisis, I would meet with you. This can be a very positive, proactive thing. We understand that most, you know, times you just initially hold back because you think, gosh, is this really safe? Is it confidential? Yes, it is, because the gospel is our only hope. So please take advantage of what the Wesleyans have provided for you. That's why we're here. We will be here through tomorrow afternoon at like noon. So there is still time. Please sign up to meet with a staff member. It's on the app. So like if you're on the app, you can go and like there's a thing right there that says Pastor Serve. Just click on that and you can find times to meet with us. We would love to do that. Right, Wesley?
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. There's a growing epidemic of isolation and loneliness. Is that true or not? Massive. And we see it almost every day, even though there are things that would say, well, it seems like we're a lot more connected. But it seems like the fact that we're more connected through things like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter make us more and more disconnected. It's interesting because in the USA, you have a cabinet and you have all these positions and you've got the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Defense and on and on and on. In the UK, it's different. They're not called that. They're called actually ministers. So you've got, who's in charge of the Health and Human Services and all of these roles. It's interesting that they expanded that in the UK less than 1 year ago. They appointed a minister of loneliness in the UK because they said it was an epidemic, because it was killing their country, because there was more and more people who lived their lives in isolation, and they did all sorts of surveys and found that there were so many people that even in the last 6 months had not had a conversation with one friend, and they said it's a national crisis. So they appointed a minister of loneliness who sits on the cabinet in the UK. That's amazing to me because I think that that's the world that we are in. The overall health of any church or ministry depends primarily upon the emotional and spiritual health of the leadership. I don't know who this guy is. I hear he's got some type of credibility. He'll be speaking at the next session. But the emotional and spiritual health can be tied directly to relational, true intimacy. Not just accountability, but relational, that which we'll actually talk a lot more about. September 5th, 1989, there was a car wreck in North Carolina that was an unbelievable car wreck. A car went off a cliff, plunged 65 feet, crashed below, and everybody in the car survived. Heard that story and I thought, that's absolutely impossible. There's no way. Turns out it was not like an SUV. It was not a big car. It was a smaller car. There were 14 people in the car, 11 of them children. You know how back in the old days, you would just cram in the car and you'd put some on the floorboard and some up in the window. And I mean, you'd have people everywhere. This car was absolutely jam-packed. It was completely full. The car goes over the cliff, and by God's grace, hits all four tires down at the same time. There were lots of broken bones, lots of broken backs, but everybody lived. They looked at that situation, and they said the reason why everybody lived was because the car was jam-packed, it was full, they acted like shock absorbers for each other. And the pain was shared from person to person. It was passed around the car. They said that if there would have been 10 or less in the car, that everybody would have been killed. But the fact that the car was absolutely jam-packed, they all lived. I heard that story. It was just amazing to me. But that amazingly also caused me to begin to think, okay, who's in my car? I mean, who are the people I have in my life? They're in my car. Because you know what? Everybody in life goes through some very painful times. There are some crashes in life. When you come to those painful things, and those might be actually self-inflicted, those might not be self-inflicted. You have a spouse who has cancer. You're in a bad car wreck. You lose your job. We could go on and on with these things that happen that just feel just devastating. The spouse leaves you. When those hard times come in your life, who are the people who were in your car that you would say, these people are with me, they're for me, they have my back, and they will share my pain in a time of crisis? We need to make a list of people. These people are in my car. You know what? This guy right over here, Wesley Horn, we've been in each other's car for 30 years now. It's been a long time. Hoover was president. That's all I need is a smart aleck in the audience, and he happens to be on my own team. It's been a while, but it's been a long time. We're in each other's car because we know that we have each other's back. I think that that is just a great question to ask. Okay. Thriving leaders, we need to constantly narrow the maturity gap index. Now, I want to do a thing here that's a bit dangerous. Whoops, I just stepped on that Gordon, I will not step on that again. All right, I want to use a whiteboard here, right? So I know this is always dangerous in a group this size. So let me just try, because it's not a huge whiteboard, but I want to do my very best, all right? So just work with me. Is that all right? Yeah. You can work with me? All right. We're going to draw a graph here on the whiteboard, and the graph is going to look like this. Over here, we're going to put from 1 to 10, which I'll explain in a little bit. On the bottom of this graph, we're going to have a pastor's age. This is a pastor who's 20 years old. Excuse me for turning my back to you. 25 years old, 30 years old, 35, 40, 45, 50, 55, a beautiful age range right in there, 60, 65, 70, 75, 80. We're going to go to 85 because I want to make sure that even my friend that was live over here in the Hoover administration is on there. Okay. Let's say, you know, one thing that I think is of great concern is that we hear a great speaker at a conference and we say, unbelievable speaker. That message changed my life. I love him. He's absolutely amazing. He's incredible. You know what? As he was speaking, the Holy Spirit spoke to me and absolutely spoke to my heart. God really transformed me. I believe that that was prompted by God. Incredible. Okay. What's wrong with that statement? God spoke to you. God used that person to really, really speak to your heart, that there was truth. Wonderful. But you also said that person is amazing, incredible, and wonderful. Why do you think that? You saw them for just a short little blip of their life on stage, and you made massive assumptions about their life. You saw them on the front stage for just a few minutes, and based upon what you saw on the front stage, you made massive assumptions about the backstage. That's unbelievably dangerous. Because I want to ask those people, what do you know about their life? What do you know about their marriage? What do you know about their finances? What do you know about the way they treat their staff? How do they treat their children? Do they spend time with their children? Are they workaholics? We could go on and on. You don't know anything about them, but that little tiny slice, that person's incredible. But that's the way we do things, right? I mean, I'm a Chiefs fan. Patrick Mahomes is incredible. Gosh, you're my new best friend. I like that. Thank you very much. But you know what? I don't know Patrick Mahomes. I don't know anything about him. But you know, we love to use these words. Now we all understand that, right? We understand. Well, I know that I don't know that person. But what we don't understand is I think the danger that that creates in people, because those people hear those words: "You're incredible. You're amazing. You're wonderful. You're just outstanding." And that creates so much pressure for them to, in one sense, begin to hide, because nobody wants to actually disappoint other people. So what happens is this. Let's say that there is a young pastor, and let's say that on this scale that he starts off and he's about a 5, which means, you know what, he's pretty gifted. All right, he's pretty gifted. He or she, and trust me, he or she. So let's say he or she is a 5. I believe that if they work hard, if they're teachable, if they're coachable, if they learn, and if they grow, I think throughout their life that they could very potentially grow from a 5, and at the end of their life, they might be all the way over here at about an 8, which would be amazing. This is their talent. It's their talent. It's their God-given ability. It's their gifting. Everybody here is not created equal. I've not met that one who I thought, okay, I met him when he was a young guy and he was about a 1, and I met him at the end of his life and he's like Billy Graham at a 10. That doesn't happen. Because there are some that God gives some gifts to, and to others he gives other gifts, right? It's like those talents, some 5, some 2, some 1. And you have to just understand that there is a range in which you can grow. If you start off as a 5, you might be able to grow to an 8, although I think that that would be almost extreme. If you start off at a 4, you might grow to be a 6. If you start off as a 1, you might grow to be a 4. Don't be angry with God about your gifting. Just take the gifting that you have and use that for His glory. Now, there is another line here, and it's your character. The thing is, so often we see your talent and your ability, and we just assume character. We just assume, well, she leads a large church. She must be really, really mature. That's a bad assumption. He's got this massive ministry. He must be a great guy. That's a bad assumption. Because there is a character line that is very different, very, very different from this line. While this line can have overall just a very, very steady growth, the character line is, I mean, like it's never steady. Now, let's say that you have this same young man or woman, and they're, and let's say that they're unbelievably mature. But let's say that throughout their life they grow, but it's up and down, right? You know, that there's a crisis here. They grow here. Here's a time in which they just really, really plateaued for a long time. Grew big time here. Tough time here. Really hard time here. Grew here. And you know, we meet with a lot of pastors who oftentimes, if you just kind of trace your line in your story, you kind of end up, and it might look something like that. What you want is, it's a phenomenal thing when your character matches your gifting. When your character matches your gifting, it's a great day. This gap right here is one of the most dangerous gaps in the world. And we call that the maturity gap index. We call that the MGI, maturity gap index. So if you start off as a 5 and down here, you're a 1, you have an MGI of 4. If you're a 4, 5, or 6 or more, it's a massive red flag. We meet with a lot of pastors that lead very large churches, very successful, and you would think, wow. And they're incredibly immature. Now, this is accented more than anywhere in the world in the sports world. Because you've got those in the sports world that are, I mean, like if you're involved in actually pro sports, I mean, like you're up high here, right? I mean, you're just unbelievably talented. But there are some very, very gifted athletes who are incredibly immature. We could mention a lot of names, like a Johnny Manziel, for example. Unbelievably gifted and talented, right? Unbelievably immature. And you know what would have made him a great NFL quarterback? If he would have just grown up a little bit. I mean, if he would have just matured, if he could have had some people speaking into his life that would have helped him to grow up. And you watch now, and there's, I don't know if you watch sports every week, but there's lots of examples of people you think, okay, they're right on the edge, you know, like a Baker Mayfield. You think, okay, he could be a great quarterback. He's going to have to grow up a little bit more. He's still, you can just see it. He's really immature. But if he grows up a little bit more, he's going to be a great NFL quarterback. There's so much of what you need to do to just grow up. Now, there are pastors that have got this gap. And the question is, what do you do with this gap? Do you hide? Do you just say, you know what, I do need to just actually share with people, you know what, I've got a gap and I know that I have to grow up and I know that I need to have relationships to grow up. Because so often when you have these gifts and abilities, and you know that you're down here, it leads you into isolation because you're so afraid of sharing your story with others. Now, I know a lot about this because, let me tell you something, this is my story. It's very much my story. So I have a church and it's growing. It just goes extremely well. And when a church goes well, they want you to speak at more things and to be on more boards and all of these things. So it's got all of these outward signs of it's going extremely well. But on the inside, I'm thinking, I've got so much fear in my life. And my main fear was, if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. So I don't want you to actually get to know me. I don't want you to get to know my heart. Because if you knew all of my greed and my lust and my envy and my jealousy and my idols in my life, you'd say, you should not be a pastor of a church. So the fact that there was some grace in my gifting, there was huge amounts of fear, which caused me to hide more and more things in my life. I needed to grow up. Making me a better pastor would be if I could just grow up. And you know what also? I was a theological bully. A bully. Here's why. Because there are things that we will die for, right? We will die for the fact, okay, you know, I mean, like the fact that Jesus Christ is God. We will die for that. The fact that we are saved by grace through faith in Jesus Christ alone. We will die for that, that there was a resurrection. It was true. It happened. It was, you know, we will die for these things. There are lots of things over here that we hold in this hand that we might have lots and lots of, you know, views on. Like the use of spiritual gifts and baptism and the role in the church of women. And we could go on and on. And, you know, there are some very smart people on both sides. And so we hold these things over here very, very loosely. What made me a bully was I had about five or six things from this hand in this hand. And that didn't make me a nice person. Because you think, well, I think I'm probably smarter than you, so if I can just talk with you, I can probably convince you that my view is right. And in about the mid-90s, it took God about 2 years of just prying open my hand and just saying, you've got the wrong things over here. These things need to be held very loosely. Stop being a jerk about these things. That's the exact word that God used to me. Stop being a jerk about these things. Anyway, because we have to hold these things extremely loosely. But when I became a lot more open about that, it helped me to grow up. We desperately need those in life that will be honest enough to say, hey, listen, I love you a great deal. And you know what? You're amazingly gifted. And I see these gifts and they're growing in you, but there's an immaturity in you. So I was on staff for years with a great man. His name is R. Kent Hughes. I don't know if anybody has heard of that name, but he's just an outstanding author. He's just a great pastor. He is the real deal. And I was his youth pastor. This is back in the 80s. This is back in a long time ago. And I love Kent Hughes. I mean, he was like I just thought he was just the absolute greatest. And there's one day he said, hey, Jimmy, let's have lunch together. I'm like, I want to have lunch with Kent Hughes. That's a good thing. I love that. So we went out and we had lunch together and we sat down and he said, hey, you know what? I really, really love you. And I just care, lots about you. And I have watched you with the youth. And I've just kind of watched you teach and preach a few times. And I've just kind of watched you with the parents. You know what? You've got some massive gifts. And things are really, really, really going well. I mean, like, you know, just as far as numbers and growth. And I mean, I'm thinking, this might be the greatest lunch of my entire life. This is the greatest. And then Kent says to me, however, you have a Messiah complex. And I said, excuse me? He said, you have a Messiah complex. And at times you use your words to actually twist people just a bit, and you actually manipulate them. And I've watched you with parents sometimes, and some things you've said have been inappropriate with the parents. And Kent just goes down this list. And I just sat there just stunned, kind of slouching in the chair in the restaurant, more and more thinking, okay, this is the worst meal of my entire life. And then Kent said, you know, I know that this has been unbelievably hard to hear, and it's going to probably be hard to actually process all of this. So I wrote all of this down, and he slides this envelope across the table. The envelope that he slid across the table, it's right here. It's one of my greatest treasures in life. It's one of my greatest treasures in life. September 13th, 1982. I've kept that with me. Always. Why? Because he had the guts to say, hey, you know what? You're pretty gifted. And you're dang immature. You're going to have to grow up. And I want to help you grow up. Here's some things you've got to work on. And he gives me six things, but point four had actually A, B, and C. So it's actually eight things. So it's like, okay, Ken, is it six or is it eight? It's eight. But you know, this means the world to me. I mean, that's a treasure of mine. My gosh, if my house is on fire, I'll get my wife and kids out. And you know what? I want to grab this letter because it means that much. Because he cared enough about me to say, I want to be straight with you. I want to be honest with you. You've got to know that there are some ways in which you can grow up. So we need to do some really, really honest assessment about ourselves. Where are we? Where are we on this scale? And what can we do to grow up? Now, I mean, like you might say, well, yeah, but it almost seems unfair because if you're more gifted, I mean, let's say you have two you know, two really, really young pastors, and they have the, you know, some big issues down here. One's here, but one might be up here at like an 8, and you would say, no, wait a second, that seems unfair. Just because you're more gifted, you would have a much higher MGI. That MGI would be 7, and you'd say, that seems unfair that if you're more gifted, that that's a bigger deal. It is a bigger deal, because if you're more gifted, you have more and more opportunities. If you're more gifted, you oftentimes people turn a blind eye towards stupid things that you do if you're really, really gifted. Hey, we know that he just abused his wife, but by golly, we just won the Super Bowl. You know? I mean, like if an athlete does some great things for your team and your school, sometimes we turn a blind eye. Because we, why? Because we like to be around famous people. We like to be around the big deal. We like to be around big name pastors. So we know that there's this big time pastor. He's involved in these things we know are wrong, but we're going to kind of turn a blind eye because the church is growing and people are being led to Christ. And there seems to be this real enthusiasm about the gospel in our church. So why rock the boat at this point? And we begin to have that type of a mindset, which allows more and more pastors, men and women both, to begin to abuse things and the gifting that God has given them, because nobody will confront them on their immaturity, on their massive issues as far as their character. How do we deal with this? So you say, okay, this is all good. I mean, let me just walk through just a few more things here. There's the chart, but it's just hard to see exactly what that is up there. All right. There are gifts. There are, you know, lots of gifts that we might have that can be abused if we use them in the wrong way. So, for example, it might be preaching. But you can also manipulate people because you're just very, very good with words. It might be passion, but you belittle other people that don't share your passion. It might be, gosh, you're unbelievably insightful, but you oftentimes correct people before they're actually, like you're actually invited in. You might be just a strong visionary, but you believe, well, everybody should be a strong visionary because ENTJs are not the only strong leaders in the church. Amen to that? Uh-oh. Come on, baby. Come on. Come back. All right, maybe. I might be in the whiteboard the entire time here. Jiggle the cord. Step on the cord. Oh, it was there for a second, wasn't it? Okay, knowledge. We shame others that might not be actually as knowledgeable. Uh-oh. Maybe. All right. We're going to do away with it. All right. Because it's going to become distracting. All right. So. Does that turn it off? Are you sure? Yes. Okay. Oh, we're back. Let me try it again. Double click. I'm triple clicking. Let's just turn it off.
Okay, all right.
Is it off? All right. All right, so the question is, now I'm going to be on the whiteboard the whole time. So if you're in the very back, tough luck. All right. All right. So the question is, what do we do to fill the gap? What do we do? Okay. I have an MGI. What are the things I need to do to fill the MGI? And at PastorServe, over the past 19 years, we've worked with thousands and thousands of pastors. And we have found that those pastors who thrive in ministry, now, where did I just put, there it is right there. I've got six key relationships that they have in their lives. And this is really the key to what we want to talk about here today. Six key relationships. All right? Three of them are professional, and three of them are personal. Okay, first of all, let me just draw that. Let me just put these up here on the board, then I'll go back and talk about them. We believe you need to have a boss, a trainer, and a coach professionally. Personally, you need to have a counselor, a mentor, and then just a good friend. Boss, trainer, coach, counselor, mentor, friend. A boss. A boss can be your champion. A boss can have your back. You might think, well, a boss also creates boundaries, and I don't feel like I can do the things I need to do. We believe you do need a boss, because if you don't have a boss, it's almost impossible to have a champion. Someone who has your back and says, you know what, I want to fight for you, for your salary, for your time off, for those types of things. You need to have one who will absolutely do everything they can to just make sure that you feel protected. You need to be trained. You're all here right now, and so that's a great sign that you have hearts to learn and to grow. You can't get to that point of, well, I'm at the point now where I kind of need to be the one who trains, and we have a large church, so I need to be the one who always speaks and always trains. We need to have hearts that learn and are trained. We must have hearts that are just extremely teachable, which means that you're out there and you're reading and you're at the best conferences and you read some blogs that might be good and you read things that might really provoke thought in you, and that you talk about those the things with others. You have a coach. You might say, well, I have a friend and we meet about once a month. And we have lots and lots of great conversation. And he asked me how things are going, and I share. And she meets with me, and she wants to know how things are at the church. We have a nice conversation, and I say, that's absolutely wonderful. But that's a friend. That's not a coach, because a coach, it's extremely intentional. They're not random conversations. They're very, very intentional conversations. It's mostly question based. There's a lot of questions asked of you to help you draw out some things that you might be struggling with and some ways to actually start to move to a place where you think, okay, gosh, I'm in a much, 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 much stronger place. Now, we hear, I'm in a large church, and so I feel like I need to have a coach who's also in a very large church because I want to make sure that they know everything that I'm actually going through. If you're in a large church, it might be great for you to have a coach who's been in a very, very small church. You don't have to have a coach that is way, way above you as far as gifting. You think, well, gosh, on that chart, I think I'm about an 8, so I'm going to have a coach who is about a 9. Question for you. Dean Smith was the coach of Michael Jordan all throughout college. If they were to play a game of basketball, who would win the game of basketball? Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was far superior to him, right? You know what? It's okay. It's all right. It'll just be distracting at this point. It's all right. He was way, way above Dean Smith. Why was Dean Smith his coach? Because he had knowledge. He had insight. He had years of understanding. He was able to say, Michael, I can see the big picture. You can't see everything. But you know what? You're a big guy, but you need to work a lot more on like your dribbling. So we're going to play you at actually point guard a lot of the time, because it will help you. He had all of these insights. It's amazing. We need to know that there are those that might not have a massive ministry or a big church. They can be the best coaches because they might have years of insight and understanding, and they can look back and they can help you to act actually address those things. Counselor. A counselor helps you to look back. And there might be some big things in your heart, and you think, man, these things are buried. I buried these things long, long ago. You know what? It might be the best thing in the world to bring those things back up. You need to have a counselor that helps you to look back. You might process, your parents' death or a friend's death or the loss of a job or some hard things in life. It can be extremely valuable. There are some phenomenal Wesleyan counselors. There are some great counselors in the Wesleyan Church. Use them. We need to have those that can just really, really help us to see the big, big, big picture of life. That's actually a mentor. You don't have to meet with them every week, every month. It might be twice a year. That's it. You might just call them. But they can see the big picture. And you're just asking them, you know what, I'm at some places in my life where I need to have some big advice on some things. That's just extremely important. And then we all need to have really, really close friends. We know that you're in danger if you say, well, you know what, it's a staff-led church, so actually I'm kind of the boss. I don't have a boss because I'm the lead person. And you know what, I don't really get trained that much anymore because I'm the one that does all of the training. I don't have a coach. I've not been to counseling. That just kind of freaks me out. I used to have a mentor. He was from college, but we lost touch years and years ago. And if I'm completely honest, I don't have a real true friend in the whole world. We know that that person is ripe for a fall because they're living their life in isolation. You need these relationships because if you have these, the odds of things actually starting to go well in your life are massive because that gap begins to close because you have those that love you, care for you. They will be honest and speak with you about these things. We believe that you need to have these key folks in your life. Now, this does not have to be six people because you can wear more than one hat. So you could be a trainer and you could be a counselor. You could be a coach and you could be a mentor. You could be a coach and you could be a friend. I think it's hard to be a boss and a counselor. I think that that's a little bit hard. But it doesn't have to be six people. Now, this can't be your spouse. It's like, well, I've got all these relationships in my life. As a matter of fact, my spouse fills them all. You know, he's my boss and he trains me. He's my coach. No, that's not it. So it's not your spouse, all right? But I believe it needs to be at least three to four, I mean, or so. But those are extremely important roles. And the role that can help you close that gap faster than anybody is really just a good, good friend. We desperately need to have good friends. Now, I want to talk about this just a little bit and use a tool that we use quite a bit at PastorServe. Okay, those of you in the back, are you guys okay? All right, all right. I don't know if you know this, but there's a whiteboard up here. I'm writing on it, so I'm straining everything that you're trying to see here. All right, a tool that we use a lot at PastorServe is called the Johari window. Have you heard of the Johari window? Phenomenal tool. For years and years, I said that it was built by this man named Dr. Johari. That's untrue. It was built by two friends named Joe and Harry, and they just combined their names. That's the honest truth. So there's no Dr. Johari. It's Joe and Harry, but they named this the Johari window. And this has been extremely helpful to us, especially in terms of friendship. What they said was, they drew a graph. The graph looked like this. They said there are four parts of our life, and the way that we find those four parts of our life are this. There are things I know about myself. Things I know about myself. Next to it, they said, there are things I don't know about myself. Things I don't know about myself. Right now, I'm really wishing we had the projector, but that's all right. But if you can read my handwriting, we're okay. Are we all right? Over here, things you know about me. Things you know about me. And then lastly, things you don't know about me. Things you don't know about me. All right, let's fill this out, all right? Okay, so if I know this about myself and you know this about me, it's what? It's public information. It's open. Public information, common knowledge, everybody can see it. I know it, you know it, everybody sees it. If I know these things about myself and you don't know these things about me, it's what? Okay, it's both. It's private, or it can be a secret. Well, we'll come back to that. If I don't know it about myself and you don't know it about me, it's what? Just unknown. It's hidden. Let's say hidden or it's unknown. If you know this about me and I do not know this about myself, it's what? Blind spot. Now, would you agree that these are the four parts of our life based upon this paradigm? Blind spot, sorry. There's always one. There's always one. A blind spot. Now, I mean, if you agree with this, for lots of you, especially men, it's a huge moment in your life because you're saying there is potentially a blind spot in me. There are potentially some things in life that I just can't see. These are part of all of our lives. Now, there are things that you hold to be extremely, extremely private. That's fine. I don't want to know, I mean, like your Visa card number. I don't want to know your social, you know, we could go on and on. However, you might have secrets. Secrets kill people. Secrets are killing pastors. And I would encourage you that you need at least two good friends in life that are not your spouse who know all of your secrets. You can share with them everything in life. I mean, I have friends who know everything about me. I mean, every aspect of my life, of my finances, of my sexual history, everything. They know everything. Because we don't need to have secrets. Secrets crush you. It's amazing how if you share your secret with one person, so much of the power of Satan is lifted. Because you're just convinced, I have this secret. Gosh, it was years and years ago. I have this thing, and it was in high school or it was in college. I can't talk about that. And yet you wake up every morning, and the first thing on your mind is today the day that they find out my secret? And it's crushing you. And Satan is using that to crush your spirit. And you need to find a good friend who you can go to and say, I want to be honest. Here is the stuff in my life. Here are things I'm just actually struggling with. We need to have friends with whom we can share every secret. I had a guy, phenomenal pastor. He lives very, very, very close to here. He called and he said, okay, we have to meet. And I said, okay, can we just... You know, can we just talk on the phone? No, we have to meet. I'm like, okay, when? He goes, I need to meet you now. And I said, okay, you told me that you're in Tampa. I don't think that's going to work for us to meet now. He goes, no, I will fly to you now. I said, well, actually, I'm about to fly to speak at a deal in Denver. He goes, okay, I will fly there. I will meet you at the airport. He did, which is, I thought, this must be serious. So we sat down and we talked at the airport and he said, and he just starts to sob. And he said, in high school, I was on the golf team. And I was a sophomore, and I was a phenomenal golfer. But there was a senior who was unbelievable. And in state, I won state. I won state golf title in Florida. But he said, I cheated. And this guy on our team who was so good, he got second in state. I stole that from him. I stole this state golf title, the thing that this kid had worked for his whole life. I stole it from him. And he said, I've never told anybody. He's just sobbing. He said, it's been killing me. My whole life that's been killing me. That I did this thing. It's a secret. I just can't carry it anymore. So we just talked about it. And I said, you know what? You need to call this guy and apologize. You need to call the state high school athletic board and confess that, and he needs to be made actually the champion. And he did all of those things. But he just began to go through his life. He went through some things in college. He went through things about his taxes. He just confessed these things. He said, I've carried so many secrets. And this guy leads a large church. He leads a phenomenal ministry. You would think, man, this guy has it all together. If you saw him up on stage, you'd go, he's amazing, he's incredible, he's wonderful. But he'd been carrying these secrets. They were crushing him. If you will just confess those to even one person, it can bring massive transformation in your life. Don't allow those things to crush you. Okay, hidden. You think, well, you can't really know. I mean, that's just it. It's just hidden. I believe that that is one of the main purposes of actually fasting and prayer. And I believe that by fasting and just praying, God, just show me things that I can't see, that my friends can't see, that my spouse can't see, that my colleagues can't see. Show me things. And I believe that in actual fasting, that God can just float things up, and you can just begin to see things much more clearly. And then over here, the blind spot. We need to have those who will say to us, hey man, you know what? You can't see it, but you are the man. We need to have a lot of Nathans in our life, and I say a lot, 2 to 3. You need to have those in your life that you actually appoint to be a Nathan. Now listen, you can't be that if you're not actually asked to be that. You can't just, hey, I don't know you that well, but I see a blind spot in you. I just wanted to point that out, and I don't know you that well, but I see some blind spots in you as well, and the guy who is not a Chiefs fan, I see some huge blind spots in you. You know what? You can't point those things out. You have to actually appoint people. So you've got to go to probably two to three friends that know you well, that work with you, that have lots of contact with you, and you need to say, listen, I know there are some things in my life I just can't see. I know I've got some blind spots. I need you to point them out to me. I need you to help me see my blind spots. And you have to be ready. You have to be ready, because they might come back and say, hey, yeah, you know how you have a really quick wit and you make a lot of jokes, and there's times after church that we stand around and we talk, and you've made some jokes at times, and they've been at your wife's expense. And everybody laughs, and your wife laughs. I can tell, though, it hurts her. But for some reason, you just can't see it. You have to be ready for those kind of things. You know how sometimes you're really nice with, like, a lot of waitresses? You know, there's times in which I think you cross a line, and I think that you're flirting, and I just don't think you know it. But it just comes across wrong. You have to be ready for those things. I have a dear friend, phenomenal African American brother. We do lots and lots of life together, and we run a trip actually in Haiti, and we're on a big bus, and I began to play some fun music on the bus, and then I began to play just some great songs about Motown and such. I'm like, man, Brooks, man, this is your music. And he's got a bunch of his good friends on the bus. And I'm like, man, this is such good stuff. And I'm having a great time because we're playing Michael Jackson and Diana Ross and the Supremes and on and on and on. And that night, my friend came to me and he said, man, I love you. I love you. Man, you're one of my best friends. But my church does not know you. They don't know you. They don't know your sense of humor. And the way that you were kind of dancing as you played those Motown songs, my church kind of thinks that you're a racist. It just crushed me. I'm like, man, I had no idea. So the next day, I just apologize. But it was a blind spot. You've got to have friends that are willing to point out the blind spots in your life. We cannot live our lives in the isolation because it will absolutely kill us. We could put names on the board of so many pastors that you know of who have had massive falls in the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years. I mean, some big names. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking because they were surrounded by people, and yet they lived their lives in isolation. And of those big names, we've probably been involved in the past 3 years with probably 6 big names. And I'm telling you, it's the same story over and over again. They just thought they were too big. They had massive amounts of praise. People loved just to be constantly around them because their church was so big. Everything was so amazing. And yet there was so much that was wrong. There was a front stage and there was a backstage. And the front stage and the backstage did not match. And yet nobody would speak up because they had not actually said, hey, I need to have Nathans in my life. There were no Nathans. Even though they're surrounded by people, they had no friends that would just be honest enough to say, there are some big issues that you have got to actually deal with. We've got to believe the gospel. We've got to have friends that will preach the gospel to us. We have to have that. So I had a friend, and he called me, and he said, you know what? Man, I need to have a long, long conversation because I am really, really struggling. And I said, okay, man, let's have a long conversation. We talked for about 2.5 hours, which is a long, long phone call. He said, man, my life is a mess. He said, first of all, my family. And he just starts to sob. He said, I have a daughter, and she's gone. And she's just gone. We think she's like around Atlanta, but we don't know. But we've heard lots and lots of rumors that she's into just all sorts of bad things. And our hearts are breaking. And I've been down there and I've looked for her. I've looked for her. I mean, I've looked in some bad parts of Atlanta and I can't find her. But I love her so much. I love her so much. She's doing stupid things. I know it. She's gone, but I love her. We're just pursuing her. We can't find her. He said, my marriage is a mess. He said, my wife is struggling. She's having a hard time. And he just pours out his heart as far as his marriage. It was just heartbreak. And he says, our church has just been through so many ups and downs. I'm just having a hard time as a pastor. I've lost my confidence. I just don't actually believe God anymore. It was so painful. It was so hard. And then he said, and me, my heart is so far from God right now. He said, I'm doing so many stupid things. I know that God wants nothing to, he's just rejected me. God wants nothing to do with me. And so I'm just so far away from God because he's so far, far away from me. So after all that time, he just pours out his heart. He said, what do you think? And I said, based upon what you've told me, I think you're like the father of the year, and God pretty much sucks as a father. He said, excuse me? I said, you probably heard me, but I think you're like the dad of the year, and God pretty much sucks as a father. That's what you've told me. He said, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. And I said, 2.5 hours ago, you told me. This extensive story about your daughter. And you know she's in sin, but you're pursuing her and you love her and you go down. You told me about Atlanta. You said you look for her. And you said over and over again, I love her so much. And yet you told me about yourself and your own heart and you said God has abandoned you. God wants nothing to do with you. God has rejected you. So based upon what you said, I concluded that you're an amazing father and that God is not. Then there's a silence of about a minute. That's a long time on the phone. You think, okay, did they just hang up? Is he gone? And then I began to hear sobs. And he said, dude, I have never thought about that in my entire life. God is pursuing us. We need friends to remind us God is pursuing us. So you heard at the very start about my bio. I have a great wife. I've got great kids. It's just great. I've got kids that are there because we love them so much. It was like, we have to actually adopt you because we want you to be actually in our family. So my son has just this amazing wife as well. And it's just a great family. So we have some there by marriage, some by blood, some by adoption. Because those are the three ways that you could actually join a family. You can join by marriage, by blood, or by actually adoption. Do you know that you're in God's amazing family all three ways? That's how confident that you can be that God has you in his family. We're there by blood. We're there by marriage. We're there by adoption. All three of those things are all throughout the scripture. I love the fact that we could not be more secure in God's family. We're there. We need to be reminded of that. You need friends to remind you of that gospel truth every day. So I would just ask you, do not live your lives in isolation. Live your lives connected to people. Because isolation will destroy you. It destroys churches every day. We need to be those who are connected to Christ's body. We're a part of what he has called us to be. Last, just real, real fast. Friends will help you to know God much better. Three guys, they're best friends. Chuck, Jack, and the guy's name is Ron. And so Jack, Chuck, and Ron, man, these guys are best friends, and they do life together, and they meet together, and they drink beer together, and they write stories together. And you would know these three guys as Charles Williams, J.R.R. Tolkien, and then C.S. Lewis. Jack, Ron, and Chuck. And so Lewis is a bit jealous because it seems like it seems like Ron and Chuck are kind of close, and there's times in which he kind of feels like a third wheel. And then Chuck dies. And then Lewis thinks, okay, now it's just us two, so I want to become much closer with Tolkien. I want to become his best friend, because now there's no Chuck, it's just me and Ron. And so they, you know, spend more and more time together. And then Lewis has this amazing insight. Amazing insight. He says this. He says, I learned that as I spent time with Ron, I knew him less and less. And the reason was because there were certain parts of his personality that Chuck could draw out that I could not. And I learned that when Chuck was there, that he could draw out these certain things of Tolkien. I could not draw them out. So when Chuck was gone, I began to know Tolkien less and less. And he said, if that's true of people, how much more so of God? The fact that we spend time with friends who know Jesus Christ and their perspectives helps us to know God better. Because you're in the midst of cancer, you're going to see God. God is my healer. He's my everything. He's my all in all. And this person over here, they just lost their job. God is my provider. He is my resource. He's these things. And you know what? Where you are in life, you can see God in just a bit of a different way. And as we spend time with a diverse group of people, it's so good to be very, very diverse. We're going to know God better. Friends are going to help us to know God better because they're going to draw out certain aspects of God. It's like, gosh, I hadn't even thought about that. But as you speak about that, that's so true. That helps me so much. Have diverse friends. Friends of race, friends of gender. They can draw things out. And that can help us to know God better. We need friends in life. God has created us for true community. We need to be connected. So my challenge, don't live your life in isolation. Thanks for being here. Have a great general session. We'll see you.